This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, Mariners last night, they lose 8-3 in a rain-shortened game. Game that now puts them almost within elimination because Oakland won, and so they're almost on the verge of getting eliminated from the race for the wild card. That probably will happen before that series, and so that's kind of sad news. But again, the reality of what it is in the National or in baseball. But you know, they just still continue the series down against Texas. Texas fired their manager, and so you know, Don Wakamatsu now is the new manager. Let's get into some football scores. Kent State and Ole Miss tied 7-7. That's in the second quarter. Georgia leads Missouri 13-7. It's Buffalo 21, Rutgers 6. Maryland over Minnesota 14-3. How bad is Nebraska? Nebraska right now, 19th ranked. Michigan 23, Nebraska nothing. Akron State over Iowa State 7-7. Boston College losing to Purdue 13-7. It's Notre Dame 14, Wake Forest 6. Ohio over Cincinnati 21-0. All these second quarter scores. SMU leading Navy 10-7. Toledo over Nevada 21-14. Pitt is trailing North Carolina 14-7, and they're just getting started. Louisville and Virginia, no score. Lots of stuff to... Oh, yeah, of course, in college football last night, Washington State loses a close one to USC, 39-36, one field goal block with about 1:14 left in the game. Tough one, so now the Cougs are 3-1. Huskies take on Arizona State tonight here at home. It's a chance to try to continue to get better and try to win. Then, of course, you got the Seahawks, a bad injury report. You know, Ethan Posick out with an ankle injury. They've got K.J. Wright is going to be out. He has the knee problem. No Doug Baldwin. And there's kind of wondering about what's going on with Earl Thomas. I mean, he hasn't practiced. He missed practice yesterday. They said it was a personal thing. And they're not sure exactly if he was going to be able to play or not. Who knows what's going on with Earl Thomas? My guess is he's able to play. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, how do you figure what's going on with Earl Thomas? Or can we figure what's going on? Another mystery.
I mean, I have no idea, John, like most of us do, looking at this. Caught by surprise when Pete Carroll came out. You know, it's vague enough that everyone has got to speculate on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Earl hadn't said anything. He was shown at practice wearing a cap and watched him practice. So you wonder if it was a personal issue, a family issue, if he would be at practice. He was. He missed another practice you mentioned earlier in the week. It's just very difficult to figure out what's going on. Is it a precursor to a trade? If so, if it was Dallas, why would they have him looking at practice?
Right.
I don't see that they would. So, I think it's a mystery. It's, in my opinion, you know, just the fact that whether or not he plays is what impacts the team. I don't think this is something that's going to impact the team this late in terms of all the media speculation. But it's very bad optics for a Seahawks team as they started the season 0-2, and as a big challenge against Dallas to have their star player, who of course last time against Dallas ran into the head coach's, Jason Garrett's room and asked to trade for him, you know, all of a sudden coming up with this mysterious issue where he may or may not play. And I hope there's some clarification before tomorrow, but I'm not sure there will be.
No, I know. It's a head scratcher, no question about it. So, you know, you would anticipate he's going to play, but then nobody knows for sure. And then you look at the injury on the offensive line. That's got to be concerning because there's no Ethan Posick. More than likely, there may not be a Justin Britt, although he may try to tough it out. You know, that affects the run game because now you have two changes, and then you got DJ Fluker making his first start.
We hope Fluker winds up being a positive because obviously you traded for him and you wanted him in particular to augment your commitment to a run game. He's by reputation, a road grading kind of guy, a guy you can run behind. So we'll see if that in fact happens, but certainly it is offset by the other losses. You know, J.R. Sweezy, who has filled in for Fluker and not that well for that matter, now has a chance to play the other guard spot, which I don't think he's ever played. I think all of his previous 68 starts I was reading were at right guard, and now he's going to be at left guard, which is a new spot for him. Although Posick wasn't necessarily going great guns either. It gets back to your point, though, that, you know, it's just and Britt, of course, was injured, I guess, going after Russell Wilson's fumble. You're right. He may try and tough it out, probably will try and tough it out. But how effective can he be against the Dallas team that is certainly not a great football team top to bottom, but has a very good defensive line and has a defense that's on the way up as opposed to their offense, which is seemingly stagnant a little bit, although they'll try and play a power game against the Seahawks on defense and run the ball a lot with Ezekiel Elliott. Dallas' strength really is on defense, and the Seahawks' injuries are kind of playing right into it.
Yeah, no question. But that's another mystery as this mysterious season continues. The type of game, I would imagine, you know, if the Seahawks can keep the game close, it still will be ugly, but they still would have a chance to win if they get into the fourth quarter and it's 3 points or less.
Well, I mean, that was the goal in the old days, and it's still the goal now to be within a touchdown with Russell Wilson, though they really had that opportunity in the last two games. And even though, you know, the last game they scored a touchdown late to make it within a touchdown, before Russell Wilson obviously threw the pick six, they were within a touchdown. So he had the ball in his hands down by seven in the fourth quarter and was unable to deliver on a drive. And in the first game, the same thing happened against Denver. He's been sacked 12 times in those first two games. But as you said, I think that's obviously the goal for the Seahawks, is to be within a score late. I kind of think it's going to be, I think you do too, just on paper anyway, it certainly looks like a low-scoring game, although massive turnovers can change that, or big-time special teams plays can change that. But on paper, it looks like two teams that are struggling on offense, though I think the Cowboys would be more likely to break out of their funk than the Seahawks would be, and two teams that are pretty solid on defense. I mean, that's the thing you got to say for the Seahawks, is without Bobby Wagner, who's back this week, they managed to play a pretty good defensive game. Now, again, it was against Mitch Trubisky and the Bears, who I don't think are a very good team, but it was on the road, and the winning on the road is always tough. But this is a very, very big game, obviously, for the Seahawks if they entertain any hopes of the postseason. I mean, you can get there if you start 0-3. It's happened. But
it's happened like five times. It's so rare.
Yeah, I mean, the Seahawks don't feel like they're that kind of a talented team. I'm very curious to see what the environment's going to be like at CenturyLink. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion that people will be excited when they get there, and it'll be noisy. But this is a team that's lost four of their last five home games last year, and that included a 42-7 demolishing by the Rams. And I get a sense that the fan base is a little bit impatient, and I'll be curious to see how they react if the Seahawks struggle early. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to be a game where they struggle. I agree with what your line was about it being an ugly affair. That's likely to be the way it is. But if they're in there in the fourth quarter, they still have, even with his problems in the first two games, they still have a very good quarterback and still would have a chance to win.
They really do. Speaking of environments, what is going on with USC? They're able to, I mean, they can't even draw 53,000 for a game on a Friday night.
Well, I mean, they were 1-2 going into that game. That had a lot to do with it. I mean, it's a front-running fan base, if there ever was one, down in L.A., where there's a million other things going on. And night game, Washington State is not that particularly a sexy opponent, but that was a great football game. That was a really entertaining game to watch, even though Washington State winds up with the missed field goal, or the blocked field goal, I should say, at the end of the game, not even having a chance to win. In an odd circumstance, that they run the ball on a 3rd and 6 in USC territory late in the game, as if they were setting up for the field goal to just tie it when they really had a chance to win it. That having been said, SC's fan base is front-running. So, I mean, I did not expect that to be an intimidating environment. It was not an intimidating environment. The Cougars played well, just not well enough to win.
Yeah, but missed a blocked field goal, that kind of blocked it. But I think what it does show is that Mike Leach has really done a better job with this team than I think people expected, because I think everybody thought that they would be like 4-8, somewhere in that neighborhood. I mean, they're 3-1 right now, and sure, they've had three puffies, but I think they showed that they can play a pretty good game on the road against a team like USC.
They certainly did, and they're going to be a challenge for anyone to play. That offense is just, you know, kind of like we were talking about on Bob Gross and Tom yesterday when I was on with you before our show. You know, Mike Leach has changed the situation over at Washington State, where it used to be, if they were able to get a good club together, it would take all the resources they had to kind of peak for 1 year, and it would be a rebuild. It would be a starting over, and it would be a couple of years of losing before winning again. And Mike Leach has changed that. He's He's created a winning culture that the team, I mean, they're overcoming an incredible tragedy and a loss of their quarterback, and yet are able to go ahead and get a guy who was going to Alabama to learn the game and had been a starter for a couple of years at another place, who steps in right away and plays well. And their defense, although they really did struggle against SC, and that was a bit of a surprise because SC has struggled this year. Their defense has been very good for them. So I would agree. I think, you know, we'll see what they do. We'll see how they bounce back. I mean, SC was off a loss 37-13 to Texas. Granted, it was at Texas, but, you know, it was a game you would have expected them to really flatten them out. And they, as college kids are wont to do, bounce back very strongly. We'll see what Washington State can do next week.
Yeah, but boy, that was a fun game to watch. And what kind of game do you anticipate between Washington going up against Arizona State?
Well, it kind of depends on Jake Browning, I think. You know, Jake has been, like quarterbacks are, a lightning rod. And, he's led him to a very good win against Utah last week. But what he's done, and it's kind of similar to what Russell Wilson has done, is he's made some uncharacteristic mistakes, and that's kind of what's stepping out a little bit. I mean, he still made some plays, and they won the game. But he also made some very, very, very questionable decisions when he got sacked on a couple of occasions and intercepted on a few bad passes. And that's, I think, the concern about Jake Browning is that, not that he still can't make the plays, but all of a sudden he's making bad plays along with the good. And his quarterback rating, we went over this yesterday, since his sophomore season when he had 43 touchdowns and 9 picks, went down last year. He had 19 touchdowns, just 5 picks. And this year he's already got 4 interceptions in 3 games. So his accuracy has been off, too. He's under 60% passing after being over 70% that year 2 years ago. So that's the question. I mean, I think Washington is a superior team. Arizona State's going to have a very difficult time doing anything on offense against the Washington defense. The secondary is one of the best, if not the best, in college football. Whether or not it's a 17-10 win or a 20-17 win or 20-14 win or Washington gets 35 or 42 points, I think it's dependent on what Jake Browning shows up. And I know Husky fans would like to see at least a facsimile of the Jake Browning of 2 years ago. Just a guy who's not making bad decisions. If he doesn't make any bad decisions and they can control the turnovers, they got a better team than Arizona State. But that doesn't take away from the job that Herm Edwards has done. It was a tough loss for him last week against San Diego State at San Diego State, and that's kind of what his concern is. We had him on the air on Wednesday. He's playing on the road. But they had beaten Michigan State, who was ranked in the top 15 the week before that. So he's already having more success than people thought he would. But Washington is clearly the better team here.
Yeah, no question. And, of course, now on baseball, Mariners lose 8-3 in a rain-shortened game, and they're all but eliminated mathematically. Oakland winning last night. It's just a matter of a day or two before they officially get eliminated from the wild card race.
Yeah, and then the offseason kind of officially begins, and it's a big one because they're going to win between 85 and 90 games probably this year, and it's going to be viewed as a failure. And it should be viewed as a failure. I mean, their goal is obviously put out a winning team, but it's to make the playoffs. And it's not just making the playoffs. Oakland played great, take nothing away from them, and they're going to be a threat in the postseason for sure the way they're going. And they had won on a Chris Davis walk-off home run last night in their game. But the Mariners, if they had played 500 ball from the time they were 24 games over 500, would have been in it at this point, and they're not. And they really have got to decide which team they were. Team in the first half of the season, the team in the second half of the season. We got to decide whether or not what's going to do with Nelson Cruz, who is having a great year, but is 39 years old. They have the second oldest team, I think, in the majors. So they've got big questions to answer in their starting pitching rotation as well, because that really faltered down the stretch. So it's kind of identifying which team they are, the team that played the first half of the season, or the first, a little bit more than half of the season, or the team that they played in the second half of the season, which is the team that was a team that would have averaged about 75 wins or not. Jerry DePoto has already commented on this, and I agree with him that this is going to be a very challenging offseason for them to decide what they want to do, because they do not have a bunch of prospects ready to move up to the major league level and augment what they have. They're going to make moves. It's going to have to be via the trade route or via the free agency route, and they don't have a whole lot of cards to play, although they do have some good pieces they're keeping. I mean, obviously Mitch Haniger is a guy you can build around. Gene Segura is a guy you can build around, and they will. But it's at the point now where the season can't end too soon for the Mariners.
No, and that's the thing. It's like they've got a series coming up against Oakland, and it's going to be pretty much meaningless. And, you know, they have at least played decent over the last week to show that at least there's some pride there. But, man, this thing, you know, the ultimate tease. I mean, the tease in the sense that, you know, you thought that it was going to be a chance to make the playoffs. I mean, they had an 11-game lead and all that stuff, and they've squandered it all.
I mean, in July, they're playing at 100-win pace, for crying out loud. So it's not as though they were just leading in the wild card and playing okay. I mean, they were playing great baseball, and just to fall off a cliff like that is going to be something that haunts a lot of these guys.
Mm-hmm. No question. It's going to be interesting. So what's on the Groz schedule today?
Football, buddy. And I'm definitely looking forward to another game in the Pac-12, which is Stanford and Oregon. As Husky fans, will kind of keep an eye on that one, too. That one will go a long way towards determining who the top challenger is for that North championship. And Stanford is very, very tough. So we'll see if Oregon can give them a game.
Should be a good one. So thank you, as always, and we will talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good, John.
That's Bob Groz and Tom, and, of course, Dave Grosby, on every day from 12 until 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. I'm still stunned by Nebraska. Scott Frost goes there, and they're getting beat up bad every week. I mean, that thing is just an absolute dumpster fire. So Nebraska's losing again today, and that's not good. I mean, again, you want to try to see where they are. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Robert in Kirkland. Hey, Robert.
John, thank you for taking my call. And I just like to express an opinion about my fears about the Pete Carroll era and the Seahawks right now.
Right.
Being a longtime fan, there's no doubt about it that Pete Carroll is probably the best coach the Seattle Seahawks has ever had. Now, I would put that hands down, you know, because he's taken us to 2 Super Bowls, won one of them, won national championships under him, divisional championships, I mean. But then I look at his history, and I go back to the debacle that happened at USC. And I'm looking at the discombobulation that's happening now with the Seahawks. It's like I don't like saying, you know, I've heard some comments on Twitter saying that has the game passed him by? Is he too old? You know, and stuff like that. And I don't believe that's the case. I just think what the case is that he likes the chaos, but doesn't know how to control it when it gets too far.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing it right now with this Earl Thomas. You saw it with beginning with Lynch and probably even before then. And it just seems that he can't correct this ship, and we're going down. You know, we're not a playoff team. What I saw against Chicago, and I agree, the Chicago is not a very good team, I saw a team out there that was messed up on offense. The offensive line, I don't care what you guys say, is pathetic. That was weak.
Right.
They were better, but it was still weak. You saw Russell Wilson trying to adapt to this new stay-in-the-pocket type play atmosphere, and these play calls by Schottenheimer are just old. You know, and it's not Russell Wilson style, and we just got clobbered. This is going to happen, and I don't think this is a reset mode. This is a rebuild year. I'd like to get your opinion, thinking that maybe if it's going to be a rebuild year, why doesn't Paul Allen just start from scratch and end this discombobulation with Pete Carroll and leave on good terms?
Well, then who are you going to have as a coach?
Well, there's plenty of other coaches out there that.
If there's plenty of other coaches out there, if there's plenty of other coaches, why did the first year coaches go 0-7 in the first week? And why is it that usually more than 50% of them fail?
Okay, but then look at Pete Carroll when he was starting out as a coach. All right, he went 6-10 with the Jets.
Yeah.
He was 10-6, in 97 with New England, but then dropped down to 9-7.
Yeah, so but he ended up getting two teams to the playoffs in 4 years.
Yeah, but then he was fired.
Yeah.
So, come on. You know, someone saw something in Pete.
But see, now this goes to the point, because there's too many firings in the National Football League. And that's what you're promoting. And again, it's like, I mean, it's going to be a thought around town.
I'm just saying that it would probably be for the best before the situation arises again, because he has a history of it. And it's obvious. And I know you guys won't mention it so much.
But by the way, did it go well from Mike Holmgren to Jim Mora? No.
No, that was even worse.
Well, yeah, but see, that's the thing. You don't know what you're going to get. And understand.
That's how come you have to have a system down to where if you're going to change coach, you have a system down to where you're not going to go through that Jim Mora, Mike Holmgren. Stop using that excuse.
That's reality. But the reality is.
The reality is
there's less good coaches available now than there ever have been. Because what's happened, you've picked them all. I mean, they've picked them all apart.
That the GM of our system can't handle a new coach.
No. Who's going to be the coach?
That's what you're saying, then, Clayton.
No, what I'm saying is they fire too many coaches now, and the pool of coaches is as thin as it's going to be. You know, everybody wants Sean McVay. Everybody wants Doug Peterson. Well, okay, how's that going for Matt Patricia? Is that going real well? How's it going in Oakland with John Gruden?
Yeah, well,
is that going real well?
Trust. I understand your point of view. I do.
No, the point of view is
that you show that you still use that 10-year ago thing that happened between Mike Holmgren, and you know what happened with them.
Yeah.
You know what happened with Mike, that people started
the point is,
and that was obvious.
You go into the unknown, and the unknown can come back to betray you and beat you. Are you going to find a coach as good as Pete Carroll? Tell me who the coach is, and then we can talk a little bit more about it. But again, firing the coach ultimately.
I'm not saying fire Pete Carroll. What I'm saying is let him play out this year.
Yeah.
And then go from there. Start the rebuild season. Because if you're going to just use that same old excuse of, oh, Seahawks had that bad experience, Mike Holmgren and Jim Mora era. Sorry, man, that was a different GM.
But here's where the problem is. If you go to a different coach who's not, say, from the Pete Carroll tree of coaches, now you totally change your defense. And then you set things back another year or two. I mean, you've seen it with
the... Who do we have on defense that is still that Legion of Boom besides poor Bobby Wagner and an Earl Thomas who's a nutcase? Come on, man.
All right. Well, hey, Robert, caution on that, because again, I see it happen too many times. You get into the Cleveland Brown mode where you keep firing coaches, the Buffalo Bill mode where you keep firing coaches. How's that going in Buffalo with that coaching change? It's like I can give you more examples of failures than success.
Sorry, you know, when you have an ownership of Paul Allen, we're not gonna, that's apples and oranges. I'm sorry there, John.
No, okay, then name me the coach. Tell me the coach, and then we can talk. Where's the coach? Who is it going to be?
Well, next week, and I'll name that.
Okay, name one next week. Think about it. You got a whole week to think about it. Hey, Robert, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jones in Kirkland.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, good to talk to you.
Good talking to you.
I want to get your take on something right now. When I look at the Seahawks, and I look around the league, one thing that is lacking with these Seahawks, where is the playmakers at?
Yeah.
I mean, who do you have to, you know, worry about, you know, losing sleep at night for when it comes to a playmaker? Our last playmaker was Richard Sherman, because you wouldn't throw to his side of the field.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
A valid point. Playmaker is still Russell Wilson. And
I agree with that. But the problem is, we don't let Russell Wilson be that playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really...
Well, actually, in some ways, in a different way, they have him being the playmaker, but the problem is the plays aren't totally designed. It's all scrambles and, you know, do it on the run. So, I mean, he's set up to be the playmaker, but unfortunately, they're not necessarily scripted type of plays that you would necessarily call.
Right.
But no, you bring a valid point, because, you know, taking Doug Baldwin out of the mix...
Uh-huh.
You've basically got four out of five receivers, and you know Tyler Lockett, of course, is right now the number one of that group, and he does have some speed. But you're right. Is he putting fear in anybody? Probably not.
Nope. That's the point. That's the point. And until one of these draft picks starts stepping up,
Mm-hmm.
That's my concern.
Well, that's the one. And the one thing on the positive side, it looks like it's a good draft, and some pretty good players are going to be developed from this draft. But again, that's not translating into victories right now. That's still going to be more into the future. You know, on defense, you still have Bobby Wagner. You still have KJ Wright when he's healthy. And then, you know, Earl Thomas is still in the mix there. Bradley McDougal's become a playmaker. And Frank Clark on the defensive line.
Yeah. Okay, well, I just wanted to get your take on that. And let me tell you something real quick.
Yeah.
Nebraska, they're not going to be the same team they used to be, just like Michigan. You know, some of these teams, man, they've got to understand, they're not what they used to be. I just had to let that be known. But anyway.
Let's put it this way. They sure are. Hey, thanks for the call, Jones. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dave in Burien. Hey, Dave.
Hey, John. Well, we cooped it last night.
Oh, that was a tough one. That was tough.
The refs didn't help us, though. I mean, blatant targeting, shot to the head on our quarterback, you know, late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they missed the other one, the other targeting where SC guy went head first into our guy when he's laying on the ground, you know, led with the head right in there, head to head on a receiver, didn't call it. And then the blatant holding going down the field, the guy's going down the field, the guy's holding his jersey and they don't call it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't understand why the Cougs, you got a high school quarterback out there, you know, they're running the ball that first drive of the game. I mean, the linebacker's playing off the ball. Why don't you bring him up into the line and force them that kid to make plays? You stop the run, and then you blitz this kid from every way possible. But we didn't do that, you know. And that first drive showed it. Then the defense stiffened up. But then all those stinking pass interference calls. I mean, these kids weren't turning their heads.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful to watch. The kid just throws the ball up there deep. And the receivers lose track of the receiver. I mean, our DBs lose track of the receivers. And when the ball's coming down, they don't turn their head. When the guy looks for the ball, his hands go up. What's our guy do? Run into him or grab him or doesn't turn their head? It was painful to watch at times. But those refs didn't help us. But between the spots, they didn't get us.
I would imagine they're all Pac-12 refs because, again, the group itself gets criticized, I think, as much as any in the country, whether that's fair or unfair. But, you know, you always feel like with the Pac-12 officials, it's going to be a little bit shaky week to week.
But it's the calls that they didn't make.
Yeah.
It's some of the stupid calls they did make, you know, that didn't help the Cougs. But it's the calls that they didn't make that helped USC. But, I mean, this is not a good SC team. This we should have just blown these guys out. We had a chance to just bury them, and we didn't do it. That was the bottom line. We had them down coming out the second half. We could have just buried them in that game, and we didn't do it. You just got to step on their neck and just crush them, and we didn't do it.
Nope, and that's, of course, it just sets things back, unfortunately. It's
4-0. We could have been 4-0 and ranked.
Right.
You know, instead, now we're 3-1, and now, you know, this is a good team, though. Don't get me wrong. This Cougar team is good. They're going to surprise a lot of people better than people think. That quarterback, our receivers. Look at our offensive line. They didn't give up a sack last night. That's 2 sacks in 4 games.
Don't you think this is the deepest group of wide receivers that this team has ever had?
Oh, yeah. This is talent. That Patman kid and some of the other guys. And I still think, no matter what people say, James Williams, if he was on a team that focused the run, if he was on an SEC team, where they would just straight run for the most part,
right?
This kid would be great. He is a super running back. The only problem is he doesn't get a chance to show it with the Cougs. If he was at the UW, I mean, he's to me, he's as good as Gaskin. So you put him on the Dogs, he would have just been real good. I mean, this team is going to be good, and just hopefully they could just learn how to step on people's necks and put them down when they got them down and bury them.
Yep, that's
go Cougs.
There you go. Well, tough one to the loss, but at least they were competitive and they had a chance, but unfortunately didn't get it done. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Russ in Spokane. Hey, Russ.
Hey, I wanted to get your thoughts earlier this week on the radio. They were talking about fixing the Seahawks offense.
Okay.
And it seems to me we have a hard time running a hunt route on a blitz.
But that's a fair point. Yeah, that's something that they need to get better at. You know, and again, it's like, but you know, they've done well in the past. But you know, you have a whole new group right now that's trying to adjust. And you know, it's one where you know when you because again, you got a scrambling quarterback, and so sometimes you don't know if you're a receiver where you're going to be. But you know, I think they coached it up well. But right now, it's like you know, everything's kind of going against. And of course, I mean, you saw that you know the several times where Russell Wilson you know would be trying to scramble toward one side, and then you know Von Miller would catch up to him. You know, they kind of knew where he's going to go. You know, because you know, picking up the blitz is you know the quarterback's responsibility. He's usually pretty good at that, but not so far. That's been like everything. Everything's off right now.
Yeah, I also wanted to know your thoughts on why we don't line up in like a pro set with Penny and Carson in the backfield at the same time.
I think what they prefer to have more of the fullback. I mean, not they don't use it that much, but they would rather have the fullback more involved in it when they're going two backs. I think they, and I know what Brian Schottenheimer was saying back at the minicamp, or actually probably more at the OTA, was that you know spacing. Because, you know, they still like to come out of a three-receiver set with spacing, you know, and try to do it that way because that opens up some things and, you know, takes a guy out of the box. I mean, if you do that with the two running backs, I mean, yeah, you might have some variety, but, you know, and I think at some point they will do it. But right now, I think they're trying to get so far back into the basics that to do anything, and that's not exotic, but it's something that, you know, I don't know if there's going to be immediate success with something like that.
Okay, I just thought maybe, you know, give the linebackers more to think about, get them to step up, open up the receivers a little bit.
Yeah, well, the big thing that's improvement from last year is that there is more of a commitment to get the ball in the passing game to the running backs. I mean, you saw for like 13, 14 weeks, it was not even a thought last year. I mean, you know, it was until J.D. McKissic started doing some things. I mean, you didn't see screen passes. You didn't see quick passes to the outside. You know, they started doing it later in the season, but, you know, they at least have more of a commitment to do that now.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right. Same to you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Clayton in Puyallup. Hey, Clayton.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Nice name, by the way. Very nice name.
So I want to talk about Jermaine Ifedi real fast after two games. There's been two instances in the games that they've been able to show us, like, kind of close-ups on Ifedi. The first one was when he had the unnecessary roughness called when he was knocked down on the ground in the first game. I don't know if you remember, he got knocked down from the back. But he came up, and he just kind of jumped up and ran back to the huddle. And it wasn't – he didn't stand up for himself. He just kind of showed, like, I'm challenging his grit. Like, if he's actually got – like, obviously he's got the skill and the talent to be in the NFL because he's in the NFL, he's starting.
Right.
But I just don't – I don't know if he's got that edge. And another instance was when on this last Monday night when they showed the mic'd up with Khalil Mack. And Khalil Mack's sitting there. He's like, I'm going to get that one back. I'm going to get that one back. And you hear Jermaine Ifedi. He's like, come on, man. And it was just like he's not standing up for himself. And I feel like – in that first game, Von Miller kind of toyed with him in the first half, kind of figuring out what he could do with him. Mm-hmm. And then he just unleashed on that second half.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like that's what kind of Pete Carroll and everybody's seeing. They see this guy with this tremendous talent and what he can do, but it's almost like he's Bobby Boucher and they can't figure out how to get him to start standing up for himself and turn that monster on yet.
Right, right. No, fair point. I mean, you know, he's at this stage still in that struggling stage. And, yeah, and I think that has been a criticism that I know some of his teammates says that, you know, he's not into it as much as he should be. And so that, I think, is a big issue. So,
yeah.
I mean, because.
And then one more thing. I don't know. Sorry if I'm trying to take your time. But I've looked at Schottenheimer and kind of the quarterbacks he's coached. And the primary quarterback that he's been successful, you look at kind of Andrew Luck and stuff like that, he's been behind in these pocket passers. It's interesting to look at who the success he's had when he's coached and kind of worked with those more mobile running back quarterbacks. He hasn't had success with them. So I'm wondering if It's more that he's trying to make the pocket passer out of Wilson.
Is that the quarterback? Or because clearly this is the best quarterback he's ever worked with. I mean, when you think about it, it's like, he worked with Andrew Luck last year, but he was not the play caller. But when primarily Mark Sanchez is your guy, you know, and you look at the other guys, I mean, you know, name some of the other guys, if you can, off the top of your head to see. And I think you can see, you know, you're going to be as good as your quarterback a lot of times.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's hard because I feel like a lot of people aren't sold on Schottenheimer yet. I feel like they're trying to change. And I think you said it, trying to change Russell's game. And if you take the player out of Russell and you try and sit him there, it's like, he's great because he is mobile. He's great because he can move. And if you don't let him move, you take away what makes him unique, what's made him be so successful to this time. So, but thanks for the call. Thanks for letting me
talk. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we get to an interesting part of the season. Let's go to Robbie in Bellevue. Hey, Robbie.
Hey. Hi, John. I'm a big fan of your podcasts. And I'm a true blue fan of the Seahawks, too.
Well, thank you.
But is it time? Are they going to trade Earl Thomas now? Looks like they're holding him out for a reason. So what are your thoughts on that?
No, it doesn't look like nobody knows for sure. I think that you can see with what he was able to do on the field, he still has great value to this team. I mean, you know, you notice that, you know, Pro Football Focus rated him the best safety and McDougal the third best safety. But you know, there is no, at this time, any effort to do anything contractually with him.
Yeah, that's my worry. I mean, there's no questioning his ability or capability or his temperament or what he brings to the Seahawks game. But at the end of the year, when he walks out, are we going to lose him for nothing? Like we lost Sherman for? That's my worry.
No, it would be a third. If he walks out, it'll be a third round compensatory. Depends on who signs him.
True. But our records have not been good, John, on the compensatory pick front, right?
Third round compensatory can be okay because, I mean, you figure usually in drafts you can get starters in the first three rounds. But, you know, if you can't get the value in a trade and you can't get the contract signed, and right now it's debatable whether they're going to go contract or no contract, you know, so you just have to kind of sit back and wait.
That's true. I mean, I guess there are two sides to a story. As a Seahawks fan, I would still like to retain him, though. Yeah, I love my Earl Thomas.
You know, he's a great
Thanks,
one.
John.
I think he's proven it on the field. Now we'll see where this mystery goes tomorrow. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Absolutely wonderful, wonderful. And I hope, as always, Mrs. Clayton and you are doing well.
We're doing the best we can.
Are you okay? Well, it's got to be fantastic if you're involved.
No, we're trying.
So, Mr. Clayton, a couple things. First, on the college. Oh, man, Wake Forest, it's halftime,
right.
And they have already run 56 plays, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm, that's nice.
They did over 105 plays last weekend against Pittsburgh.
Okay.
They're playing on a field that's 130-plus degrees today, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
It is hot there.
That's nice.
But, you know, an ACC conference game for the Irish. And they're handling them quite well. They should win.
You would think. I mean, the matchup is such that they should be able to win that game. I would agree.
You know, that was a quarterback change for the Irish.
What happened there?
Kelly put in Ian Brock, who's A1. If he's second string quarterback, but that kid can throw the ball. He runs the offense better than the other quarterback was doing. So
okay.
He moved him in, and he's doing outstanding, Mr. Clayton.
Well, that's encouraging.
So, Mr. Clayton, now let's talk about NFL.
Uh-huh.
Boy, sounds like the mobs are forming, Mr. Clayton, for the Seahawks.
Things aren't the fans aren't too happy right now.
No, they're not. It's a good thing you guys have Twitter because it sure would be hot trying to talk to the fans.
I know. They're taking it pretty hard right now.
So, Mr. Clayton, you know, I heard this frightening stat last weekend about 0-2 teams do not make it to the playoffs.
No, that's not
true.
You get an 11% chance of making the playoffs at 0-2. 11%.
What happened? happens if they're 0-3?
It goes to five teams have done it in the last 30 years.
Oh, my goodness.
0-3, you're pretty well done.
So when will the Seahawks get a win, Mr. Clayton?
Well, we'll see if they get it tomorrow. If not, I mean, Arizona.
That one.
Well, I agree. It's going to be tough.
Yeah,
but
what's the next game after that?
Arizona, very winnable game.
That's a win.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not so bad, I guess, you
mm-hmm.
know. But it's not good, Mr. Clayton.
It's not good at all. I would agree with that.
Okay. Well, Mr. Clayton, you have a wonderful day, and you too, Mrs. Clayton.
There
hey, Mr. Clayton, if you can, check out the Irish game. It is on right now.
Okay.
Second half starting.
Check okay, we'll see.
Check out this quarterback for the Irish that can throw the ball.
There we go. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.